Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed and Walker. Fred, like Elvis, has left the building. And joining us is Steve Jordahl.
But unlike Elvis, has not left the earth.
No, that is true. That would be a good country song right there if you could put those together.
Indeed.
How are you, Steve?
I'm well. It's a great day. Oh, man, it's so beautiful outside.
It felt like fall last night. Of course, we're in northeast Mississippi, Tupelo area. It was like 65,
yeah,
but no humidity. And I talked to a friend of mine in Madison, Wisconsin the other day. The high was like 58.
The high?
Something like
June?
That. Yeah.
Global warming.
That's what I think that's what he said, the high. I didn't talk to him. My wife Allison did, but I thought she said it was the high in Madison, Wisconsin was 58. Anyway, and that's our Weather Channel report. Steve, what do you have for us?
I heard you guys talking about the epidemic of fatherlessness. Not only the black community, but every indicator, no matter what your melanin content, as our brother Abe would say, is fatherlessness is an indicator of poverty and a lot of other things that are not good. President Trump was in Dallas on Friday. He held a roundtable. It's called the Roundtable on Transition to Greatness, Restoring, Rebuilding, and Renewing. Anyway, he had a couple of speakers on this panel, and one of them was a guy named Jack Brewer, who's a former NFL player. Played for the Vikings, the Giants, the Eagles, and the Cardinals, and he's head of the Brewer Group. And he addressed the president, and let's listen to what he had to say. Cut five.
Mr. President, you're the only Republican I've ever voted for. I'm saying that because you stood up for the word of God. And as believers, as the church, we have to pray for our president and have his back. When he raised that Bible up after those folks burnt that church, we are in a spiritual warfare. But you're brave enough to go against what everyone else has said about you. Now I'm calling on you to do more. We have a real issue in our country. In the root of it, let's not get our eye off the enemy. The root of it is fatherlessness. Our kids don't have fathers. 71% of those kids that drop out of high school don't have a father in the house. You're five times more likely to go to prison or have a run-in with the police department if you don't have a father in the house. You're four times more likely to live in poverty if you don't have a father in the house.
There you go.
Those are just facts.
Yeah.
Now, a lot, you know, human nature is to not accept responsibility for our actions.
Right. White, black, brown, yellow,
doesn't
red.
Doesn't matter. That's human nature.
That's human nature.
Yeah. So we don't want to be blamed. Somebody starts criticizing, what's the first thing that happens? Our eyes turn a little, we squint a little bit, our back burns. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We're all like that. We're all made like that. So we don't like to hear criticism. We don't like to hear that you're responsible. So, but sometimes you have to face in order to deal with a problem, you have to face the reality of it. And I think what this gentleman's saying right there is fatherlessness in America is leading to a lot of these problems that we're seeing played out. Because, listen, let's just, what does the Bible say? And again, this is for all humanity.
Yeah.
What does the Bible say about this topic?
Can I just digress for just a second? I'm going to try to do this kind of rapidly and then get back. I wrote a couple of articles for the AFA Journal 7-8 years ago, something like that. And what I read a couple of books from the first part of the 1900s. One was written by a British anthropologist named J.D. Unwin. The other one was written by Peter M. Sorokin, who is the founder of the sociology department at Harvard University. What these two gentlemen did independently, one was 1934, the other one was 1956. And what they did is they went and examined past civilizations and cultures to find out what made for strong cultures and what caused decay and the eventual death of cultures that had been strong. And you know what they found? They studied, Sorokin, for example, studied 80 civilizations. Okay, we're talking all the way back, Egyptian, Roman, all of these, Viking. You know what the number one factor, they said, for determining whether a civilization or a culture would be strong and whether it would begin to decay? Number one factor, it was always...
whether they have a McDonald's or not.
You just had to bring the triviality in it.
Bad timing.
Was monogamy. Was
really?
Monogamy in marriage. And they said that, in fact, J.D. Unwin, the British anthropologist, said it happened with sickening regularity. He said it was so monotonous. Every civilization and culture I studied, it was always monogamy. If you had a man and a woman who got married and raised their family, cultures were stronger. And the moment that broke down, they said it took usually three generations for the decay to set in. You start with this country with the sexual revolution, which was rooted in things in the 40s and 50s, but exploded into the public in 1960, where you were encouraged to have as much sex as you wanted with whomever you wanted. And then marriage began to unravel in this country, and all we're talking about is the decay that is set in. It is almost like an unwritten law of human nature. This is the way God designed humanity. You go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, and you see the fact that monogamy in marriage, one man and one woman, is the building block of societies. It's the building block of the church. And what we are living through is Western civilization's rebellion against God and against His laws for the proper operation of humanity. We either return to God and do things His way, or we'll go the route of those other 80 civilizations that they studied.
Well,
bank on it.
And you're saying it's like an unwritten law of nature. That's true, but it's also a written law.
In the Bible. Right.
In the Bible.
Right.
In the Bible, it gives us the instructions
for
families and for cultures, societies.
Yeah.
So.
When I expound on what Ed said, which is spot on, I do a speech when I go. I've done it a handful of times, but I talk about the family, I talk about the military and the economy, and how those three play a crucial role in a nation's success. Some of it from a worldly perspective, but others from a biblical perspective. But on the family part, I talk about how the family structure as God designed it provides natural checks and balances that before you even get to law enforcement and what the laws say for a country, for a municipality or whatever. And when you break that down, when you don't have a dad to discipline,
right?
When you don't have a mother to nurture, and you know there's no parents saying you're grounded or you shouldn't steal, that natural layer of accountability in the home, when you take all that away and there is none of that, the first interaction you're going to have is with a police officer. That's the first run-in you're going to have, or the principal or the teacher, when you break the rules. And so you skip that whole layer of accountability that should be there.
Right.
Well, the moral teachings that parents are supposed to give to their children, you know, affects that child for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
And if they don't get that, if they miss that, then the consequences, we're seeing them played out
right.
in
mm-hmm.
our culture today. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Steve, what's next?
Now you can talk about McDonald's.
Yeah. Yeah. On a related, kind of related, I apologize for that.
No, hey, listen, we have some fun on this show.
Kind of related topic. There's an anonymous professor at Berkeley, the University of Berkeley in in California who has written an open letter to his colleagues, and he makes some claims about Black Lives Matter. And I want to run a couple of these by you, kind of what you were talking about. He says that to say that all the problems in the black community are caused by whites, or even whites are, when whites are not physically present, by the infiltration of white supremacy and systemic racism, he says that strips black people of agency and systematically externalizes the problem in the black community to outsiders. There's no reason for them to struggle to get better if everything is not their fault, is what he's saying. He goes on to say that if we use the same methodology that we want to look at that they're using to say that black men are increasingly institutionalized in prisons, he said if we use the methodology, we really should say that the criminal justice system is more anti-male than it is anti-black. And black people are not incarcerated at a higher rate than their involvement in violent crime would predict. Mm-hmm. And then one more little thing here.
This is a history professor at University of California, Berkeley, at Early Liberal College. He wrote this letter anonymously because he didn't want to get fired, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah. So he said the claim that black interracial violence is the product of redlining, slavery, or other injustices is a historical claim, so historians therefore have to explain why Japanese internment or the massacre of European Jews didn't lead to equivalent dysfunctions. You don't see Japanese people or Jewish people not succeeding in society and having this problem, the problems of socioeconomic problems. So it's not that they have a history of racism. It didn't cause it. They're responsible. They're self-responsible. He did not publish his name. He is black. He did say in there that, well, he's a person of color who wrote this.
This goes along to kind of what we've been talking about, and what really what's going on in Washington right now with President Trump signing this executive order on police reform. What all that means, I don't know, but you know, everybody's saying we need police reform, and in some instances that may be the case, probably on a very small, on the grand scheme of police policies and rules, the actual reform needed is probably very small. But even reform is not going to fix the interactions.
Right.
Reform, you can say, well, we're not doing chokeholds anymore, which is fine. Except when the guy's 200 pounds bigger than you, what do you do then? But reform doesn't mean less interactions, and that goes along with those statistics of the number of men, especially young black men, that get in run-ins with cops. Reforms aren't really going to fix that unless they just don't show up to calls where young black men are,
right?
Which leaves the victims to be unprotected. So
minority victims, a lot of them.
Yeah, so it's really a lot of the media and the attention is really on really what doesn't need to happen. We really need to be talking about how do we make it where there's less run-ins without anarchy?
Right.
How do we make it where there's less resistance and less fighting cops, of course, without taking the cops off the streets?
Yeah. One of the other things that he pointed out in this letter, and we can move on after this if you want, but I know you were talking, Walker, about this in the break. Let me read this. He says, most troubling, our department appears, the history department of Cal Berkeley, appears to have been entirely captured by the interests of the Democratic National Convention and the Democratic Party more broadly. To explain what I mean, consider what happens if you choose to donate to Black Lives Matter, an organization that the UCB history has explicitly promoted in all its recent mailers. All donations to the official BLM website are immediately redirected to Act Blue Charities. The money that you're giving through that website to Black Lives Matter is going to elect Democrat candidates.
Explain what that group is.
It bankrolls campaigns for Democratic candidates.
When it says Act Blue, we discussed this in our story meeting. Mm-hmm. That's not a reference to the police. That is
right,
a reference to
the Democrat
turning states blue.
Right. Or, yes, elections. This is the blue-red Democrat.
So let me ask you this, and you may not know the answer to this because this is the first I've heard of this,
mm-hmm.
that the money that is donated to Black Lives Matter, the organization, goes directly to Act Blue, you said, is the name of this
Act Blue Charities, yes.
Act Blue Charities. So let me ask you this. Does that mean that Act Blue Charities decides what to do with the money, or do they just hold it for Black Lives Matter?
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, that's what's kind of confusing, because when you're on the Black Lives Matter website, which I am, but then you click donate, it really takes you to a separate website. It takes you to the actblue.com website or platform, which all the major Democrat candidates use ActBlue platform to process campaign donations.
Right.
And ActBlue, when you go to ActBlue's website, they are a Democrat-run nonprofit that they process payments for all Democrat campaigns.
Right.
So this would be like the NRA using the Republican National Committee's campaign payment processing system to run donations through. It's a very convoluted situation. And where the money goes that's donated to Black Lives Matter is really unclear, which to me, that's problematic.
Right.
Does it go to Black Lives Matter as a nonprofit, and what do they do with that money other than protest? So a lot of unanswered questions there.
Yeah. Not everybody in the Black community is necessarily on board with Black Lives Matter. I want to play you an interaction between a woman who was in Chaz, this new independent country that's in the middle of Seattle, and she's a street preacher, actually. You'll hear a little bit of that at the end. And she wanted to talk to a white resident of Chaz about what the Black community is really about. It's a little hard to hear. Listen closely, and I'll try to clean things up afterwards if there's something you can't understand. Cut six.
These Democrats, and I'm sorry to say this, I'm not trying to be racist, but they hate Black people. These are the same people who fought to keep slavery in. These are the same people who built the KKK. These are the same people who hated us from the beginning. The Republican Party is the party of the Blacks. Blacks free, the Republican Party is the only party that the Black people actually assisted in finding. Why did Black Lives Matter turn into something about LGBTQ when Blacks really don't support that? We're conservative. We're really not about that. Not only that, we don't support abortion. We're about working. This is the Black culture. We ain't ever been about that. Not only that, we're not about feminism.
No, we're not.
Black women marry their husbands and respect their husbands. That's what we on. You want the benefit of Christ, but you don't want Christ. You gotta accept Christ and all of his benefits, not just his benefits without him. There's no Allah, there's no Muhammad, there's no Buddha, there's Jesus. He's the one who died, he's the one who has keys to heaven. If you want to get into heaven, and if you want to walk and live on earth as it is in heaven, you have to accept Jesus Christ. He is the only way.
There you go. The gospel comes to Chaz.
Who are we listening to?
I don't know. She was an unidentified street preacher. Her and a colleague, they were both dressed in red slippers.
That's about the bravest person.
I know, right?
Yeah, she was giving them a history lesson of the Democrat Party.
And wow. She's doing it right in the middle of that.
Right there.
And she's
that group.
Speaking boldly about Jesus, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
good for her.
Well, if you find out who she is, let us know.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, I will. I
maybe
I
hard
might
to
have
identify.
Somebody who might know, although, I don't know whether they just, well, they were burdened for the gospel for these people who are lost.
Mm. I'm with Tim. That is one brave lady.
Yep.
We'll see. I'll ask Brent to post that clip and also the clip that we played earlier of the roundtable. That'll all be posted on the Facebook page of Today's Issues.
Let me ask you guys, change the topic here for just a minute. What do you guys make of the polls that we keep seeing that show the national polls about the presidential race?
I believe them just as much as I believe the polls in 2016. They were saying the same thing in 2016. And, sometimes I'll read all these articles, get a little discouraged, frankly, and then I hear something like this Oklahoma gathering, this rally that President Trump is going to have. And a million people requested tickets to this thing. There is, just like 2016, there is under the surface something bubbling that is not being captured by polls.
Yeah. When you get accosted or doxxed because you're a Trump supporter, which happens, has happened.
Or verbally abused over the phone.
Yeah. I wouldn't tell folks I was a Trump voter over the phone either. I mean, I'm a more public figure, but if you're just an average Joe who just goes to work 8 to 5 and you get a random call from somebody, you have no idea who they are.
Right.
And they say, are you going to vote for Trump or Biden? You know, I wouldn't answer them either. So there could be some of that. Also, a lot of these polls are national polls, but the election is not really a national election.
That's true.
Right. From a delegate standpoint. So you could have Biden up 10 points amongst the general public, But how many of those are going to show up on Election Day? Nobody really knows. But also, he can win Pennsylvania, Florida, North Carolina, and Ohio, and you right. know the and yeah, lose, there, and lose 10, the popular
there's,
vote.
There's 8 to 10 states that are will, as has been the case the last few presidential elections, that will decide. We'll decide it. The other 40 states are red blue, and you just write it down. You know, they're red blue. Pretty much, you can run a monkey.
Monkeys riding dogs.
Yeah. I don't know about if a monkey riding a dog. I would vote for if a monkey can ride a dog.
Yeah,
you'd vote for him.
I would consider him. I would consider.
You never seen videos?
I think that's a skill
of monkeys riding. That is a skill. I was talking about a real thing though. Monkeys riding dogs. I'm going to send you a video.
There you go.
That's it. Sound like a grunge group, grunge band.
Monkeys riding dogs.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage. Monkeys riding dogs. You're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. Next topic, Steve.
The White House and some others have been very quick to point out the hypocrisy of the left and specifically the national news media over the way it treats gatherings with or without masks. NBC News, on their website, put out two stories consecutively within 30 minutes of each other. The same website had these two headlines. Rally for Black Trans Lives draws enormous crowd in Brooklyn. As Black Lives Matter protests continue around the country, throngs in New York City put a lens on dangers facing the black transgender community. And it has a picture of thousands and thousands of people in the street. 30 minutes later, this is the headline. Extraordinarily dangerous Trump rally draws grave concerns from top health officials.
Oh, my goodness. I'm laughing because the levels of absurdity being reached by the news media half an hour after they just applauded a huge gathering for Black Trans Lives Matter, a half hour later, they're warning that a Trump rally poses health hazards
it
because of all the people.
Hour. Yeah, this first one was put out at 4:42 June 14th. The next one at 4:57.
15 minutes. Wow.
By the way, just didn't want to let this story not be mentioned before we leave the program today. We've got about a minute left. Planned Parenthood of America, they are the largest provider of abortions in the world, has endorsed Joe Biden for president. And he has gladly accepted their endorsement.
And what did he say, Steve? Didn't he say he would do everything in his power to promote abortion?
Yeah, he's definitely way on board there.
How wicked is that?
Did he say it like that?
I don't remember the words were, but to remind me, back in the early 90s, when Joe Biden first came on the political scene, was he one of those pro-life Democrats? There were several of them.
Joe Biden? I don't think so.
No. Never has been. I don't think so.
But there were several that at one point there was a fairly decent pro-life wing in the Democrat Party.
No, Joe Biden is he's committed to abortion, which is the taking of innocent human life. That's unborn babies we're talking about. He is for, he is and has been for a number of years, as has the Democratic Party. They are the party of abortion.
He did say, I will do everything in my power to promote abortion. This was as he accepted the...
they don't usually say it like that. They
endorsement. As president, I'm going to do everything in my power to expand, he said it this way, to expand access to quality, affordable health care for women.
A.K.A. abortion.
Yeah. All right, folks, thanks for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow on Today's Issues. Have a great one.